B-Pod Studios.
Sports talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
A sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Josie's on a vacation far away. Come around and talk it over. So many things that I want to say. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
It's the noontime hour here on a Friday ahead of Sunday night football between the Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. And joining us now from NBC Sports Boston, it's Phil Perry, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Phil.
What's going on, boys?
Hi, Phil.
Really happy to be with you. Very excited today. I feel like the best times I have on the show, and granted, every time's a great time for me. You guys are both close personal friends of mine. But the best times I have on the show are when we have a great matchup to talk about that's just a couple days away. And I am considering this a great matchup. I'm very excited for this game.
Well, great in what sense? I'm curious to know more about that, why you look at this and say great matchup. Because on paper, it's, okay, Patriots and the Seahawks and two great coaches and all that stuff. But what makes you think we're in for a great game?
I think the Seahawks have become a little bit overrated. They had a great week one. That was an ugly ass week one game with the Atlanta Falcons, if you watched it. Not if you're a quarterback, but if you liked defense at all, if you had one cell inside your body that enjoys watching good defensive play, that was not the game for you. Did you know Russell Wilson was the only quarterback in the NFL in week one that did not throw a contested pass? The only one. That's a sign that there wasn't a whole lot of defense being played there, boys. And then on the other side, Matt Ryan put up 450 yards passing. This is just going to be a very different game for them. It's going to be a very different game for the Patriots. Polar opposite defense that you saw week one. Week one is a man-to-man defense, two-gapping up front. They like to blitz with their linebackers, same way the Patriots do, obvious with Brian Flores. The Seahawks are a zone defense. They blitz their defensive back, Jamal Adams. They did it 11 times the other day. And they have a very aggressive one-gapping front. So your attack, while you're still going to have these Cam Newton run plays that are going to be a big part of what the Patriots do, I think, your attack is going to have to be very different in certain scenarios. And so I still think, even though the Cam Newton offense was unveiled to a certain extent week one, I think there are a lot of wrinkles that Josh McDaniels is going to be able to get to in week two that's going to make this matchup fun to watch.
Well, yeah. I know that historically Cam Newton has not had a lot of success against Seattle and not had a lot of success against Pete Carroll in his defense. That, to me, is a concern for this game, because if Seattle does take away the run, what are the Patriots left with?
It's a great point, and you're right. You look at his career numbers, he's under 60% completions. I believe he's in the 70s in terms of his quarterback rating career-wise against the Seahawks. He's 1-5 against them. Touchdown interception ratio is not good. Yards per attempt is under 7. So, you guys, hold on 1 second for me here. My computer's about to die. This is what happens during quarantine.
Oh boy!
Way to be prepared, Phil. What is this?
What is this? Happy gotta get a horse power crap. Cord?
What is he doing?
Oh, man.
Let him take that.
I caught a little bit of his flat belly there.
He wears underwear.
Well, he wears underwear, but also, yeah, he doesn't button the bottom of that shirt either.
That's not one of Montucket's, is it? Like that brand?
Lunchtime.
Oh, did you guys just get a nice little view there?
Yeah, we did.
We're good now. We're good.
Okay.
Are we?
I was on a, I don't know. I felt like I was on a roll there, too. Feel bad about that.
Yeah, a lot of good football terms. Yeah, one gap, all that stuff.
One gap. Yeah, one gap, two gap. I honestly have no idea where I was. You guys got to help me out.
Well, we were talking about if Seattle takes away the run.
The Cam Newton numbers.
Cam Newton's had some problems against the Seattle zone defense, and, you know, that's been a bit of an issue for him over the years.
He has.
He's completed less than 60% of his passes against this team.
So here's where this gets interesting, though, because who has had tremendous success against these types of defenses in the past? Tom Brady and the Patriots and Josh McDaniels. I mean, nobody draws up better Seattle-style cover three beaters than Josh McDaniels. And obviously the quarterback is different. The quarterback skill set is very different. But if you go back to 2018, the last time Cam Newton played the Seattle Seahawks, and they did not win that game, but he performed well. He completed 25 of 30 passes. The yards per attempt was up about 8. 2 touchdowns. He did throw a pick. Yep. Had a bunch of rushing yards that game as well. That was under a different scheme. That was in that Norv Turner scheme, which is much more similar to the Josh McDaniels scheme than anything Cam Newton was running prior to Norv Turner's arrival in Carolina. So I think you can dip into that 2018 matchup between the Panthers and the Seahawks. I think you can dip into all of the things that Josh McDaniels has used for many years when he's beat up on, whether it's the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, the Chargers in the divisional round a couple years ago, the Falcons in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. They typically eat this defense alive in New England. And again, we'll see what that looks like without Tom Brady. But Cam Newton has the ability to run those same kinds of plays. And I wrote about this a lot. It's on our website now on NBCSportsBoston.com. If you're interested in this X's and O's stuff, a lot of the cover three beaters that Josh McDaniels has called in the past are things that Cam Newton's run and has run with success. And I think they're going to be able to do some of that this weekend. I just don't know if the weapons are there in New England for them to execute the same way that Cam Newton did in 2018.
See, that's the first thing I think of. You go back to the Brandon LaFell, that where he's the X and they're running the running game where it's that toss sweep, throw that slant backside to LaFell, and that's how they would get the game rolling with those guys and then go to the tight end with Gronkowski. So now you're down to Izzo and it's Damir Bird. Damir Bird, in essence, is your X. He's a smaller, more diminutive receiver where those bank slant routes are really built for your 6'2 receiver to sort of stick it on the body. Do they shuffle receivers around a little bit in this game? Or do you maybe you get a Jacoby Myers a little bit here?
So I don't know.
Sorry to bring up Myers, but I mean, they need bodies.
They do. I mean, they need Damir Bird to be fast. They just need him to be fast in this game. And they need the Seahawks to respect him. Because, you know, so when you're
in. Jamal Adams should be down in the box all game. He should be in the box all game.
He'll be in the box. And that's another thing. I think the Seahawks are overrated. Like, we think of them as the Legion of Boom defense still for some reason. They were not a good defense last year. They were 22nd in points allowed. They were 21st against the pass in terms of yards per attempt. They were 28th against the run in terms of yards per carry. This was not a very good defense last year. It was not a very good defense in week one, though Jamal Adams did make an impact as a pass rusher. But so the reason why I say Damir Bird, you guys didn't think you're going to be talking Damir Bird first segment, the 12 o'clock.
You never know. I like Damir Bird. I just don't know that he's shown us anything yet.
I say that because I think that New England's going to be different this game.
Well, he's their only obvious speed option. And to beat this defense, a lot of these routes depend on you're the guy who clears out the corner because the corner has a deep third. And if you can take the free safety with you, that's great too. You want to run a post if you're Brandon Cooks in 2017 to open up the wheel route for Danny Amendola coming in behind you. That's a great route combination to run against this defense. I just don't know if the Seahawks respect Damir Bird enough to run with him down the field to open some of those things up. Yankee concept. You want to get really into the football terminology? Oh, well, you know I like to do that. But you run the deep post with a deep over coming the other way. Who's running deep for this team? It's Damir Bird. And yeah. I have no idea if they respect him enough for him to be able to attract the kind of coverage that would open up space for other receivers.
All right, Phil Perry is with us for the hour, and we can take your calls as well. If you've got thoughts on this weekend's matchup, questions for Phil, bring them to the table, 617-779-0985. We may even have an improvement for your microphone by next break, Phil. Okay?
Oh, boy.
Very good.
Is it not good?
It could be better. It could be better. We're going to work on that with you, and we're glad you're plugged in now so the camera won't die. Phil Perry is with us. More with him coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Zoe and Beetle in the office.
It's like a sweater without nipple covers.
In the car.
You smell bacon?
In the truck.
I'm definitely not stupid, Harvey.
Getting you through your work day on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You got to go to the wide shot at Phil.
Not doing it.
You got to go to the wide shot. There it is. Oh, now we can't hear him at all, it sounds like. Jim, can we hear him? Go ahead.
You guys got me now?
Oh, yeah.
How are we feeling?
Oh, feel better. Good.
Sound good?
Sounds better.
It's better. I don't know that I'd call it good.
Well, all right.
Well, I think it's about as good as we can be with Zoom.
Yes.
I think it sounds good. Very good, Phil.
Not bad to leave a little bit of room for improvement. So it's okay if it's not perfect, but we'll get there. It's a long season, fellas.
So you're not traveling to cover the team, correct?
Oh, no, sir.
Oh,
no.
Jim's telling me it's a slower connection that you have and not your microphone's problem. It's a connection. Speed.
That could be true, too.
Yeah, it is.
We are at
Jim's
the NBC.
Saying, yes, it's true.
We're at the NBC headquarters here, so I'll have to go talk to some people.
Are you on Wi-Fi or are you plugged in?
I'm on the old wireless internet.
Yeah, it's probably why. It's probably why. Yeah. It's okay.
Does anybody plug into internet anymore?
Yeah, radio stations do.
Yeah, real people.
Radio and TV.
Professionals.
Do. We have a bunch of...
I believe you. I have not plugged into the internet in a decade, I bet.
Anywhere? Like
an Ethernet,
for anything?
An Ethernet with an Ethernet cord?
For anything?
No, guys. Do you think wireless is how most of the world operates?
Yeah, I understand that. Occasionally, there's a need for an actual wired connection.
The most pathetic part of this process is we are actually on NBC Sports Boston. Phil is at NBC Sports Boston headquarters, yet he's in a wireless mini room next to the studio.
That didn't even dawn on me. He's at a TV station.
He's at our TV station.
On the TV station. At the TV station that we broadcast
they
on.
They can't even run him a little mic over.
And we can't figure out a better way. I didn't even think of this.
Just run him a little.
I didn't even think of this.
Run a little mic over. Extend the mic. You know, a little cord. Run it right over. Just put this on, Phil.
Like I said, it's a long season, guys. We're going to come up with some answers here.
Yeah.
Nothing to freak out about.
Oh, right. Man. Okay. Well, where were we, Phil? What is it we were talking about?
Seahawks?
Yes.
Pete
Seahawks.
And Bill.
One of the things we've talked about today in Pete versus Bill is Pete going to be in the Hall of Fame?
I like that question. I think he should be. Andy Reid's going to get in now is the consensus right after he won a Super Bowl last year. Pete Carroll should get in. He should. It's just, I think what makes this matchup so interesting, Zoe, is you look at these two guys and they both have these reputations for their personalities being what they are.
Yeah.
I think their coaching personalities actually don't mesh as much as people think with their in front of the camera at the microphone personalities. And when I say that, I mean, I think Pete Carroll.
Pete's a different guy away from the camera. You're right.
Well, but he's more of an old school coach than I think people realize. Like Pete Carroll wants to run the ball. Pete Carroll, the reason Russell Wilson is not being talked about already as one of the great quarterbacks of all time, and I think he's that talented. And if he had been paired with somebody like Andy Reid, we would be talking about him that way. But the reason that hasn't happened is because Pete Carroll in this offense has been so devoted to the run game, unnecessarily so. First and second down, they are a run pass team. They are the definition of that. We mock people like the Jaguars when they come to Gillette Stadium and do that. That's what Seattle has been doing with some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL for years.
Last week on first and second down, they passed the football on 60% of the plays.
And did you hear Pete's reaction? We got to run it more. Are you kidding? The guy threw four touchdowns and four incompletions throughout the course of the game, and he still wants to run the ball.
Yeah.
The whole reason they brought Brian Schottenheimer in as their offensive coordinator with a great quarterback in place already was because they needed to fix the run game. That is caveman football, and that is not something that I think people associate with Pete Carroll. They think college game. They think flying high, feeling good. Whereas on the other side, Bill Belichick is much more willing to adapt, I think, than people give him credit for.
Seattle limited its number of rushes on second and long, which is six or more yards, to two attempts, I believe, in that game. Twice they ran on second down in that game. In 2018, the percentage of passing on first and second down was at 40% for Seattle. Last year, it went up to 49%. Last week, as I mentioned, it was 60%. And as you said, Pete Carroll gets nervous. And he's very nervous now. And they win the game going away. And it's like, oh, we got to run the ball more, guys. That's all we want to be doing.
We got to get Chris Carson involved.
We want to do that.
I know Russell didn't throw a single contested ball all day long and that we were just running open all over the field and he threw for four touchdowns basically at a perfect game. but we could have run it a little bit more. We could have run it a little bit more. And so yeah, I think that part of it is kind of fascinating to me. So while I do think he's a Hall of Fame coach, I do think this offense has been held back in part because of his philosophy.
He gets a lot of credit for finding Russ, for drafting Russ, and for playing Russ early. Now, that didn't happen that way. I remember being out there to call that first game against them, and Russ was ranked 32 out of 32 quarterbacks in the league. And I was pretty critical of him on the broadcast. Like, you're getting diced up by the worst ranked quarterback in the National Football League here. And I remember talking to Carl Smith, who was the quarterback coach prior to that game. And I said, what do you think about this? He goes, we don't know. He goes, it's a good athlete. He goes, but we have to play him because Matt Flynn's elbow is so bad he can't throw. So it's almost like Russ fell into their lap. They ponied up a lot of money to go get Matt Flynn. And his elbow fell apart that training camp to the point they had to shut him down. And it was the job was basically given to Russ. Say, all right, let's see what this kid can do. And then he took it and was off and running after that. And now he's top two quarterback in the league. But Pete gets a lot of credit for that, where he was ready to saddle up and ride with Matt Flynn. Remember, Matt Flynn was in Green Bay and had that massive game against us and ended up getting a big contract after that.
Turn around in a big way. And then, yeah. So there are some, it's funny that you bring that up. So
there's some luck to
Brady. There's some similarities to Brady's rise here. And I think both guys are, this is after watching two first round quarterbacks last night. But I think, again, two guys that had very different paths to where they are now, whereas Joe Burrow was nobody 12 right. months ago.
Boy, he looks good.
He looks good. I think he is a motivated person. And I look at the quarterback on the other side there, another first round pick,
Scattered.
A guy who's undersized and somebody who, you know, not everybody believed in, no doubt, but somebody who also was a super productive college player. And I think has been handed some stuff over the course of the last few years and just doesn't seem like the same. He doesn't have the same motivation level. I think where you look at Wilson and Brady, obviously neither guy's a first round pick. They both probably felt like they should have been higher picks. And that helps make you a better player.
That is
obviously
that,
you get first round success stories too, but I think there are some interesting similarities there with
those. That's really good for that division too, because if you're going to have that in Ohio, we're going to have that type of rivalry with these two good young quarterbacks. You also have Lamar Jackson, second year guy in that division, obviously going into year number three now, but then you got the aging Ben Roethlisberger, you know, at 40 years of age, at some point he's got to get out of there and Pittsburgh's got to find a guy, but you got four really good quarterbacks in that division. You really do.
And the quarterback that you're going to see this week, you know, talking about young guys, guys that can move. This is another interesting part of this matchup, too.
Young guys.
Well, you're talking about, I think, when you're looking at the Seattle team, again, I think we think of the Seahawks like we thought of them 5 or 6 years ago. The defense is not the same. I already mentioned some of the numbers to you. The personnel, I mean, you guys will be who are some of these players? You have Quandre Diggs, who's now the free safety, and for Earl Thomas, who obviously is gone. You have Quentin Dunbar, who's the right cornerback, who I believe got himself arrested in a pretty wild offseason story this year, who's now in as your right corner instead of Richard Sherman. Shaquille Griffin's a very good corner, so he's a great player. Bobby Wagner's still a great player. It's not the same defense, and it's not the same offense where you are afraid of the quarterback running game, the designed quarterback running game that Russell Wilson has the ability to bring to the field. He had one designed run that went for 28 yards last week. It was a great play. He had 11 designed runs all of last year. This has really sort of gone away in their offense. 11 all year. Cam Newton had, I believe, 14 on Sunday alone. So that's not something, you know, I know there were some questions earlier this week. Well, it's nice that the Patriots have Cam Newton to prepare and practice because they're going to see a similar offense in Seattle. It's not the case. They're three receivers. Russell Wilson obviously is a great athlete. They just don't use him the same way that the Patriots, I think, are going to continue to use Newton here.
All right, so to bring this back to the Patriots from a defensive standpoint, what did you make of the way they played up front in the front seven on Sunday? I thought they were better than what we would have expected. And how does that sort of come into play this weekend when I think they're going to be facing a more difficult game on the ground to contend with?
So even if there aren't those designed quarterback runs, you still do have to be aware of the scramble plays. Those are going to be, I think, the key in this game, because Russell Wilson, as dangerous as he is from the pocket, he's probably even more so when he's able to get outside and when he has 4-5 seconds behind the line of scrimmage, because then even if you're playing a good secondary like the secondary that New England has, nobody can cover for 5 seconds in this league. it almost doesn't matter if you have a Stephon Gilmore and a J.C. Jackson on the other side. So this is going to be a huge game for guys like John Simon, Dietrich Wise, Adam Butler, Chase Winovich. Chase Winovich was a man possessed week one. I thought that might have been of the things we didn't know, and there were so many in that week one game for the Patriots. I think Chase Winovich, after the Cam Newton offense and how well they ran things on that side of the ball, I think what we saw from him and his development from year one to year two, going from being a specialty sub rusher to being a 2/3 of the snaps edge defender in that Kyle Van Noy role, really is what he was. That might have been the second most important development that we learned about the Patriots in week one. And we'll see if he can keep it up. But I wasn't sure that he'd be able to play the run. He played the run tremendously. He got after the quarterback. He bothered Ryan Fitzpatrick. Even if he didn't have a clean pressure, he was rolling around at Fitzpatrick's feet. He's helping force incompletions, helping force picks. I think that was a huge, huge development, huge, huge boost for this defense. The fact that it looks like you have a replacement for one of those front seven guys that you lost this offseason. He's not going to be one for one with Van Noy, and he's got a long way to go to prove that he can be a consistent guy. But if he can play as he did week one, one question at least from this front seven is answered.
Let's talk more with Phil Perry about this weekend's matchup. It's the Patriots and Seahawks on Sunday Night Football. And what if the Patriots are to win? What if the Patriots win the game on Sunday night? How will we be viewing the team? How will we be talking about the team come Monday, Phil? Mm. All right? That's sort of something to think about a little bit. How are things going to look at this time on Monday if the Patriots go to Seattle on the road? I know there's no fans and win the game. We'll figure that out. And we'll get to that coming up next. Hardy has headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Sports Hub. Now it's time for more of Zolak and Bertrand.
That's what you put in your mouth in the morning.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You picking Seattle to win this weekend, Phil?
I am, but I think it's going to be close. I've got it at 2017.
Same as me.
2017. Yep. I just feel like that one question that we talked about a little bit last segment is a question that still looms for me. Can this defensive line use that crush rush that they call it here, where you're not trying to rip up the field and get after the quarterback and open up running lanes for an athletic guy? Can you just drive your blockers back and close the pocket in around him so that he can't escape, so that he has to throw, or maybe has to throw it away? And the sack numbers might not be awesome at the end of the game, but that could be enough to bother him. I'm not sure they can do that. The Seattle offensive line is not very good, guys. I mean, it's average at best is how I would call it.
Yep.
But if they can't keep him contained even just once or twice, that might be all it takes with guys like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, yep, who are explosive play threats. This isn't a team that, you know, we know. You know, I think the secondary is good. I'm going to like the Patriots secondary matchup just about every single week. But again, all it takes is one or two. And I think offensively for the Patriots, the Seahawks are going to really try to take away the run, and they're going to see if they can beat them. The Patriots can beat them one-on-one on the outside. And to me, they just don't have anybody capable of doing that. Even some of those traditional soft spots in this defense, like up the seams, we've seen, you know, Rob Gronkowski's had great games, yeah, against these teams. Slot receivers have had great games against these types of defenses. Who do you send up the seam right now? Ryan Izzo, I guess. Maybe Devin Asiasi. Wow. Only played 10 snaps last week. It's just the weapons. It's not really about Newton, yeah, against this defense.
Okay,
but it's about the weapons around him.
You're picking a close game, so it's not far-fetched to say the Patriots could win the game. And if that is to happen, what does Monday look like?
Shock and awe if they win it. I think it'd be the story of the league. I do. I mean, if you go out and pop Seattle and you know, you continue to throw the football. I think what Cam was in the high 70s last week for completion percentage. And that's the thing. That's the reason I'm picking Seattle in this game, is because I'm not confident enough and I haven't seen enough in the Patriots passing game. See, I think they're going to have to make some plays down the field. We haven't seen that yet. We haven't had a preseason. I just need to see more from it. But if they can keep this close and somehow, you know, pop them, I think we could be talking about a whole different ball of wax next week. Phil, why did they activate another corner off the practice squad? Like, they have so much depth at corner, and the development of Jawan Williams and what he did last week, I'm fascinated to see if they're going to put him on DK Metcalf with help and have Gilmore take Lockett out of the game. Because I think that's a way where you could limit the production of what Seattle's going to be able to do. And then does Wilson have enough patience to make plays in his legs, get the ball to the backs, and his tight end?
Yeah, how they configure the matchups is really interesting, because Jawan Williams played Mike Gesicki last week.
Yep.
You know, the Seahawks.
That's going to be a Tlaib role, right?
That was Bill Belichick, you know, supposedly called Tlaib to play.
That's great.
And I thought he played really well. And so does he get Greg Olsen? I mean, Greg Olsen's their starting tight end there. And they love to run. No team last year ran more 11 personnel, so three receiver sets, than the Seattle Seahawks. Again, I think people, they think of this offense. They think of, okay, Russell Wilson, he can run, power running scheme. It's not really what they've been. They have three receivers on the field almost all the time. The Rams are the only team that do it, and they do it at the same rate as much as the Seahawks. And so this is going to be a big game for their corners. I would put Williams probably on the tight end and just see if he can run with Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen is kind of a shell of himself physically. Athletically, that shouldn't be a bad matchup at all. And then what do you do with Metcalf after that? I would put Gilmore on him, in all honesty, though. I know he's a big, strong guy. I don't know how physical he is. And granted, I'm not watching every single DK Metcalf game, and we know what the pictures look like with the guy. I don't know if he plays as physically as he looks, if that makes
sense. Yeah, you don't see the runovers. I mean, you see the catches and him going by people, but you don't see him lowering the shoulder.
And J.C. Jackson is somebody they've trusted against big receivers in the past, too. A couple of years ago, they played him on Travis Kelce, who's, you know, a big receiver, essentially. So you have options there if you're the Patriots. Yeah. And then Lockett, do you treat Lockett, okay, you know, if we want to get full into the Kansas City analogy, do you treat Lockett like Tyreek Hill, where you get somebody who plays him underneath, plays him really aggressive underneath because he can run those intermediate routes, and then you just make sure you have a safety over the top in case there is a scramble drill situation and he starts to break down the field, because that's when he's super explosive. And he catches just about everything that Russell Wilson throws his way. His catch percentage is through the roof, so they really trust that guy. I wonder if Bill Belichick looks at this and says, okay, if we can keep Russell Wilson in the pocket and we can slow down Tyler Lockett, we're going to have a really good chance of winning this game. That's how I would do it.
And then also look at not drafting Metcalf and drafting N'Keal Harry. Maybe that could be something he thinks about on Sunday too.
I don't think he'll think about that.
No?
I don't know if it's the time to think about it, but it is. I mean, oh, okay. Listen, it's not just DK Metcalf.
My mistake.
Do you have the list there in front of you?
Yeah, I know, but I can get it in front of you.
We're not doing it.
2019 receiver draft.
Terry McLaurin is in there.
Hell, that Darius Slayton the other night.
Marquise Brown's looked pretty Darius good. Slayton. Where was he taken, though? I have to go back and look at where these guys were all drafted.
Hollywood Brown, I think, was the only receiver taken ahead of him that year.
Okay, that's what it was. So Hollywood Brown, then it was
Deebo Samuel in the second round. Oh, my God.
A.J. Brown.
Oh.
Tremendous year last year for the Titans.
That's good. It's good. What'd you make in N'Keal Harry's week one, Phil?
It's rough, man. It's rough. I listen to you guys a lot, and I heard Beadle make a great point early in the
thank
week,
you.
Which is
very kind of you.
I mean, listen, they stick out to me. It's just like, I got to remember this. It's just, you know, every once in a blue moon for you, Beadle. But the fact that he can run over people is what gets him drafted as highly as he gets drafted.
Right.
He's a big, physical run after that. He was never a separator at Arizona State.
Never. That was
he
not why
led
they
the
picked
nation
him.
In contested catches. They sent him back on punt returns. Herm Edwards did, because he's, you know, so great with the ball in his hands, even though he's not a speedster. He will break a tackle or two, and then all of a sudden you're in the open field and you're off and running.
Did you see?
First thing Zoe said about him when they drafted him, Zoe, to give you credit on that, he said, well, he didn't separate at Arizona State. I'm not sure how he's going to separate in the NFL. And I said, well, they know what they're getting.
Freaking
go ahead.
Pac-12. Yeah.
You had a point. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so here's the thing, though. There is still a path for those types of receivers to succeed in the league. Not everybody has to be Julian Edelman or Keenan Allen or Julio Jones, who somehow is a separator despite being the behemoth physical specimen that he is. DK Metcalf's not a separator. I would look at one of the best receivers in the NFL and say he's not exactly a separator, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. Does he understand defenses? Does he understand coverages? Does he know where to sit down? Yes, he does, but he catches everything that's thrown his way.
Metcalf wants the ball. Metcalf goes after the ball and wants the ball.
I think there's a mentality thing here with N'Keal Harry, because the skill set is a skill set that can win in the NFL. It can. You can scheme guys. Like, look at Deebo Samuel. Those two actually had a pretty similar skill set coming out of college. Neither guy was a burner, but Deebo Samuel was tough, physical, ran over people.
He runs good routes, Phil. When I watch Harry play, he looks sluggish.
But you're not
he
running routes in that offense.
To me.
They don't run routes in that offense.
But that's designed, but he looks like he's wide-ass open half the time.
Well, so that's that Shanahan play action scheme, bootleg. You got 4 seconds, 4.5 yep. seconds to go and run away from people. And that's what I think they're going to try to do. And that's actually the play that should have been a touchdown where he fumbles it out of the end zone. That's a Shanahan play yep. action bootleg. Like,
slip him out underneath.
I think he could thrive in that scheme. But then what happens at the moment of truth? You can't run through contact and you end up making what I think was a boneheaded play. And it maybe didn't even look as boneheaded as it was. Well, it looked to me, though, like he was trying to extend his arms and reach for the goal line.
He was indecisive.
And that's when he lost it.
He got contact on the back, and instead of lowering the shoulder and covering and trying to burrow it in, he got stuck in between. Now, Matt Chatham has a tweet out, and it shows the aerial of the All-22 of the one to the left sideline where it's designed for him, where he's in motion. Edelman misses the cut on the guy that actually tackles him. There's nobody back there. It was blocked on the outside, and it was him one-on-one with that guy, and he got stoned. Like,
he
knocked
down. He slowed down. He was tentative.
It was the perfect run the guy over and score. And he didn't do it.
Cam Newton's actually great. This is one little thing that I learned rewatching the game. Those little swing passes.
Accurate.
Those can be really hard to hit perfectly where the guy has a head of steam and he catches it in stride. And he did that 3 or 4 times the other day, and that was one of them. And so he had a head of steam. That guy weighed 189 pounds, that defensive back, Jamal Perry.
36-pound difference.
Like, that should be the only thing going through your mind if you're N'Keal Harry there, and it wasn't. And that's what I would worry about. That's not a confidence thing, I don't think.
It's not coaching.
That's not an experience thing. It's just a what is burning inside you, N'Keal? You know, to get real football guy on
it's
you.
Tentative.
You know, like, what is there that's forcing you to do what you should be doing on the field? And is it there at all?
Yep.
Because that's the skill set. And if you can't maximize that,
I give Newton credit.
That's huge in a bad way. He's
Newton's
really
pumping his tires, too. And he's trying to keep him in it because I think Cam knows I need this kid. I can't have this kid, you know, just check out on me. So I think Cam did a good thing this week, you know, trying to spin the positive. Like, did he have a good day? Yes. Did he make a bad play? Yes. Will he do it again? I hope not. He knows that. Cam was really good with Harry this week.
I thought so, too. And listen, I think he has the benefit of not having been with Harry for a year. And so,
yeah.
You know, maybe whatever frustrations Tom Brady had with him, don't carry over to Cam Newton. But there were enough moments this summer, Zoe, where I look at it. And I know you were at a practice or two.
Half a practice, and he wasn't at that one. So
okay, so he wasn't even there for that one.
So
that,
I count him.
Yeah. It just feels like every time he hit the ground, it was – you got to check and make sure everything is still where it's supposed to be. And then you go over
Thank
and you talk to a trainer.
He's looking at his hands. He's looking at his socks. He's like getting retaped. He needs extra water.
We talked a lot about when it happened at the time that he couldn't finish a practice because it was really hot and he was coming back. And Damir Bird actually had to run through and do a 2-minute drill a second time around because they couldn't find N'Keal Harry. They were looking for N'Keal Harry. He was over talking to a trainer.
Yeah.
He ended up being fine. He's back out there the next day. Like, I think there are enough moments like that where if those continue to pile up over the course of the year, I think he's limited again in practice this week with a shoulder thing. If there's always something like that, does that Cam Newton support, as supportive as he's been of him already, does that start to wane at all? Because I think that could wear on guys.
617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls. We got one more segment with Phil Perry coming up next. RJ Bell at 1.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
something?
You gotta wear your lucky jersey, don't wash the lucky socks,
rub your ball 16 times. You
know. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
Talk to RJ Bell coming up at the top of the hour. Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston is with us now. Make sure you go to 98.5thesportshub.com and download our app. Make sure you're streaming us and telling your smart speaker to play 98.5 The Sports right. Hub.
Be smart. And real quick here, that N'Keal Harry play I was talking about, mm-hmm. Tony Mazz broke that down. I just retweeted it. So if you want a good shot of that aerial of how well this was set up for him to score when he got run over, Mazz was the one that tweeted that out, not Chatham. That's on me. Go ahead.
Credit where it's due.
I got it. Yep. Okay. Jake is in the car. I know what Jim's trying to tell me now. Yes. Go ahead, yeah. Jake.
What's going on, guys?
Hi.
Long time. And I just wanted to ask you guys about Michael Onwenu and if you guys think that this Sunday that they're going to run a lot of six-man lineman sets. I'll hang up. Let me know.
Okay, Jake.
They could. If you want to learn more about Michael Onwenu, talk to his offensive line coach.
Is that the proper pronunciation, Onwenu?
That's how I understand it. Talked to his offensive line coach from Michigan this summer a podcast on the Next Pats podcast. He's great. The guy's massive. I mean, just look at one great little nugget that Gerard Mayo gave us. Now, Coach Gerard Mayo, but when he worked with us, he said, those weights that you guys have on players, doesn't matter the position, the heights are all right, whatever. You get them at the combine. The weights are a lot of times, they're just off. You guys have no idea how much these guys really weigh. Look at their asses.
Look at that ass.
I was getting ready for
you to say something like very technical.
Nope.
Gerard Mayo?
He's got a big ass. If you're watching us on TV, I got my thumb in front of the camera. He said, I used to hold my thumb up to the film, and if a guy's ass was about the size of my, you knew that guy was about 350 pounds.
Shut up.
So Michael Onwenu, massive man. Interesting guy because he was really considered a guard-only player at Michigan and a guard-only prospect for the NFL and sort of he might struggle in pass protection because these interior defensive linemen are so quick and he's so big he might not be able to move with them. And the Patriots got him playing a tackle for the first time since high school, and he played really well. And Bill Belichick comparing him to Nate Solder's rookie year. Nate Solder's a first-round pick, but he was used as a jumbo tight end, and that's how they might be using this guy moving forward.
Illuminar's got a big ass.
Another big man. Another
but I tell you what, the Wainu, he's ahead of Cam Fleming. Like, remember when they were using Cam Fleming and tagged him? They always stacked Fleming with Cannon on the same size. And I think that's why they like this kid, because I think he's bigger and wider.
He's bigger and he's more powerful. I think Fleming might have been a little bit more athletic. I mean, he was a fourth round pick. He played tackle at Stanford. Like, he could move pretty well.
He wasn't a mauler.
But Onwenu, and to Jake's point, I mean, I think the running game is just going to be big in general every single week, but especially this week, this is not a good run defense. They were 28th in the league against the run last year. So, yes, six-man lines, 14 personnel with two extra offensive linemen out there and two tight ends. I think you could see all that this weekend.
617-779-0985. All right.
Beetle, can I ask you guys a question?
Please do.
I want to ask you guys a question because I think this is an interesting topic. It's sort of relevant. It's about the receiver spot, which we were just talking about last segment. Rumors are that Allen Robinson could potentially be available. He has said that he likes Chicago. He wants to be in Chicago. Chicago has said in the past that they want to commit to him.
Where do you think he's going?
They haven't yet. So he's still looking for a new deal, which he deserves. He's making about $10 million in base salary this year. Yeah. Do you think the Patriots should be willing to give up a fair amount to bring that guy aboard?
And
I think your answer depends on how you view this team, and that's why I think it's interesting. Right. So I would say a fair amount. He's got one. This is his last year on his contract, okay? So I think right there off the bat, I'm not sure. Listen, it all depends on the market and what people are going to be willing to give up to get him. I think a first round pick is a lot and probably too much you might only be getting 10 games.
My answer is no. My answer is no on that one.
Okay. Would you be willing to give up a second and a little more?
No.
With only the guarantee of this season?
No.
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 No, you would have to. No, no. I think the understanding would be for any team that acquires him that you would be giving him a new deal. And he might even be able to have the power to say, I'm not going anywhere unless I'm getting a new deal.
Okay. If there was a new deal in place right away, I would do that.
I would do no to OBJ. Yes to Allen Robinson.
You'd do a second, a third, and a brand new contract that would probably pay him somewhere. He doesn't have to get the DeAndre Hopkins deal. He's not that accomplished.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why.
You might have to pay him like Mike Evans.
I'll tell you
why. Might have to be 16 a year.
Well, I mean, here, newsflash, you're going to have to pay guys on this team at some point. Like, I know that, you know, the Patriot way has always been to keep everybody in check. Tom Brady's not the quarterback anymore. In fact, we don't know who the quarterback is beyond this year. So, you want skilled players? You want guys with a proven track record? Then you've got to pay for them. And the other thing is this. I don't trust this team's ability to acquire these types of players on the offensive side of the ball. Receivers through the draft. They've never done it. They're not very good at it. So I think that this is a position where they're going to need to target someone in a trade or in free agency. Someone who has established themselves in the league, because I'm all set with them drafting another N'Keal Harry with a first round pick. I'm so down on N'Keal Harry through 1 year and one game that I have a hard time envisioning
N'Keal
Harry getting to a place where we say, that was a really good first round pick. They nailed that one. I mean, he may not be a bust.
I'm with him, though.
But I don't think he's going to turn out to be a star.
I see him as stuck like a three on a team. Yeah, to where he's the physical part, and you got two more dynamic guys. I don't see him flipping that switch.
On a good team, is he ever going to be the best receiver?
You know what it is for me? It's the lower legs, it's the feet. And I watch the feet in the offseason, like, oh, look, he's working out. I'm like, he's not cutting again. He's rounding his routes. All his routes are rounded. The feet aren't quick enough in a tight space.
Phil, we got to let you go, bud.
Sorry.
Great talking with you. Enjoy the game Sunday night, and we'll do it again next week.
All right, boys. Talk to you soon.
See you, Phil.
Right.
Phil Perry from NBC Sports Boston. RJ Bell from pregame. He's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.